It's Jessie. If you're hearing this, that means my limited edition capsule collection for Joe Fresh is out now. In select stores and at joefresh.com, I designed matching pieces for the entire family in a really fun, bold checkerboard print, including a baby romper, toddler and kids dress, a kids t-shirt and short set, a shirt for men, and the cutest women's linen short set that you will live in all summer long. Every piece is under $35, and warning, you will get compliments wherever you go. Shop it now before it's gone. This week on Phone a Friend, I'm live from Saskatchewan. That didn't sound as glamorous as I thought it would. Bradley Cooper is naked and the internet is turned off. Kristen Cavallari hard launched her rock hard 24-year-old boyfriend. And I celebrate International Women's Day with the funniest woman I know, Deborah DiGiovanni, and we go deep.
If you're fat, you're going to die and we don't care.
It's our final mid-season banger before season two. You better believe we're going out with a bang.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Girl, let's phone a friend with Jessie Cruikshank.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Phone a Friend. I'm Jessie Cruikshank, and I am coming to you live from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Specifically from a Holiday Inn in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Specifically, a Holiday Inn Express and Suites in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan during a record-breaking snowstorm while pumping breast milk. Do you hear that? Does that register on the microphone? I tried to finish pumping before I sat down to record this, but I just got to squeeze out the last few drops. You know, I only make about 10 drops these days, so got to get them all. Also, I cannot believe I'm still doing this shit for a 2.5-year-old. I feel like I've been strapped to a breast pump for half of my lifetime. Anyways, has there ever been a hotter, sexier, cooler way to set the tone for an episode than that? I had my live show last night. Woke up first thing this morning to record this because I was so excited to like tell you about it. I have like post live show voice, just like a little lower, a little raspier, just from, you know, talking for 3 hours on a stage. But God, what a show. Sold out at the Broadway Theater. The show that I'm going to remind you, the Saskatchewanians straight up demanded. Okay, my team said, don't go to Saskatchewan in the middle of the winter. And I said, I'm going. And as soon as I got on the plane, I started to get messages from Saskatchewanians that there was a literal record-breaking snowstorm, okay? Schools were closed the day I flew here. And when I stepped out of the airport, I took one breath and my cilia froze. Okay, I instantly regretted it. I was not prepared for this cold, this snowstorm. I packed sneakers and my toddler's gloves, okay? I live in Los Angeles now. I've gone soft. Not only do I not own the correct supplies to survive in minus 30 degree temperatures, I do not possess the will to live in minus 30 degree temperatures. But you know what cheered me up, Saskatchewan? You. You braved the snow and the cold to come to my damn show, and you are unreal, unbelievable. Here's what I discovered, okay? Turns out when you let hundreds of hardworking elder millennials out into the world after being cooped up in minus 30 degree temperatures in Saskatchewan, they go apeshit. There were groups of girls who had driven in from Regina, come in from Winnipeg to see me. Many uncomfortable men in the crowd wearing bunny hugs. That's Saskatchewanian for hoodie. I learned that while here. Okay? I was like blown away. I'm still recovering from your screams, your energy, your like laughs, your bras that you threw on the stage. You were just a dream crowd. And then my favorite part of every show is I get to meet people at the VIP meet and greet. And everyone I met at this show in Saskatoon was so nice, so kind, so lovely. So many phonies, gotta tell you, like many phonies in the building last night. It was just like a life-affirming evening. You know, and I've told you this, I've been really nervous about getting back up on stage and doing this show. I haven't performed it in a while, you know, and I have so much like, I don't know, self-doubt that creeps up in my mind. Like, can I still do this? You know, am I still funny? Like I think you lose that confidence no matter what you do. You lose confidence when you spend most of your time working from home and taking care of little kids with a sweatshirt tucked into sweatpants, okay? Sometimes, like, your ability to do what you do well or used to do well, or even just your ability to, like, engage in a work setting, you know, you can lose it a little bit or be afraid that it's gone. And I really did feel that way before walking onto that stage. But I did it. I did it really well. I'm really good. Oh my God, I'm emotional. But like, because it's hard to say this, but I'm going to say it. I'm really good at what I do. And it's almost International Women's Day. So I just want to say that with pride, okay? No caveats, no like self-deprecating jokes. Just like, I work really hard and I'm really fucking good at what I do. It's really hard for me to say that without like being like, but I'm a fucking loser. It's hard for me to like not take something away from that statement, but it's true. I put on a great show and I'm so, so glad that everybody came out. So really worth the trip, worth the frostbite, worth the permanent loss of feeling in my left nipple, worth it. So truly, thank you to everybody who came out. And after this, I'm off to Toronto to shoot my first stand-up special. And with all of this work that I'm talking about, all this business that I am handling out in the world, wouldn't it be nice to have an anthem about powerful working women to play? What's that you say? Pitbull launched a collaboration with Dolly Parton this week to celebrate Women's History Month? Roll it.
It's Mr. Worldwide with the one and only Dolly Parton.
Well, hey.
And this is dedicated to all the powerful women. This goes out to the women working hard 9 to 5.
Working 9 to 5. What a way to make a living, baby.
Oh my God. I'm sorry. I suddenly feel empowered. The collaboration we didn't know we needed. And to be honest, still not sure if we needed it. Not only does Pitbull like do Dolly here, okay? Dolly does Pitbull. Please listen to this rap breakdown.
Here's to your mama and here's to mine.
Thank you, Dolly. Dolly.
Mama worked hard her entire life. She had 12 kids at 35. Ooh. Working 24/7, 365. Working 5 to 9 and 9 to 5. They let you dream just
to get it, Dolly. I did not know that I needed Dolly Parton rapping in my life, but now I do. My life is better for it. The remix is called Powerful Woman, featuring the man who has featured butt-naked women in his videos. So a lot of people are wondering, like, what? How did this collab happen? I think I know. I think Dolly is clearly one of us, okay? Dolly has let the spirit of Pitbull overcome her time and time again. She knows an icon when she sees one. And so she said, thrust those hips on over here and lay down this remix, Pit. That was a terrible Dolly. Thrust those hips on over here. Oh my God, I'm going to stop. She probably just wanted reservations to his Henderson, Nevada Walmart restaurant, if we're being honest. And that brings me to my one thing. Oh my God, the spirit of Pitbull has really surged through me. I'm feeling ready for the rest of this mid-season banger. And I should be, because my one thing yet again is two things. Did you expect anything less on this final mid-season? No. Did you think I'd finally follow the suggested format? Absolutely not. But before I get to Kristen Cavallari's 24-year-old boyfriend, let's start with Bradley Cooper naked. My ex-boyfriend, Bradley Cooper, appeared on Dax Shepard's Armchair Expert podcast. I listened to the whole thing, and I have to say, he was funny and charming and open and honest. Unlike on our date, where he stared at me uncomfortably for 45 minutes in a hotel bar. But it seems like he's in a better place now, you know, and that's just really all you want for your exes. So he talked a lot about his 6-year-old daughter, Leah, who he doesn't often speak about. By the way, can I just say this? Love a basic name on a celebrity child. I am still recovering from the moment Anne Hathaway announced her baby's name was John. And that was like 7 years ago. I'll never get over it. So Bradley Cooper and his ex Irina Shayk's daughter's name is Leah. Love to see it. And most notably in this interview, Bradley said he's not sure he'd be alive if he wasn't a parent.
Honestly, I'm not sure I'd be alive if I wasn't a dad.
He's been really open about having addiction issues. If you recall, we talked about this on this pod. When I went on a date with him, I did not know about these issues, and I tried to push alcohol on him. Still not sure why it didn't work out between us. But on Armchair Expert, he talks about how Leah sort of anchors him and gives him purpose. And then he said something that I really appreciated, which is that he didn't instantly connect with her as a baby. Listen to this.
I remember the first time I realized, because everybody's like, I would die in a second for my kid. I'm always like, if I'm being honest, I don't know. Like the first 8 months, I'm like, I don't even know if I really love the kid.
We don't know her yet.
It's dope. It's cool. I'm watching this thing morph. Fascinated by it. Love taking care of it. Would I die if someone came in with a gun? It's only a couple of months. I don't know.
She just arrived. She hasn't had any drinks.
I'm not committed yet.
I don't know. She could be an asshole.
I mean, can we just get a damn air horn sound effect for this? So I looked this up. 1 in 10 dads experience postpartum depression and anxiety, and 0 in 10 ever talk about it. You know? Like, women have a really hard time connecting with the babies that grew in their bodies. So it makes perfect sense that a dad might have a hard time instantly bonding with this child that just sort of appears. And I was just so grateful to hear him say that so candidly with a sense of humor. You know, like as an A-list celebrity, you just don't hear men talking about that. When we had our third child, once the surprise and like joy of her being a girl and, you know, the joy of having a newborn sort of wore off and the parents helping went home and the flowers stopped arriving and it was just us alone in our home with 3 fucking kids under 4, we fell into a dark place. I don't think I've ever talked about this, but, and you know, Evan didn't tell me at the time, but he will now say that there were moments where he would drive to the store to get diapers and think about never coming home. He'd just be like, what if I kept driving? He never told me that at the time. I think because his job as the man is to sort of be strong. And, you know, I'm the one who's sort of allowed to cry 6 times a day. And I did. But he had to keep it together for us. You know, the anxiety, the depression, the fear that can set in for men is real. And I think it's exacerbated by the fact that they are not often given the space to be open about it, you know? And in fairness, if Evan had been open about it at the time, okay, if he had rolled over to me while I'm like breastfeeding our third child at 4 a.m., postpartum, no sleep, hormonal stitches still in, and he had said, honey, I want to let you know that I'm not really feeling this third baby. I probably would have said, get the fuck out, go to the drugstore and never come back, you know? But still, men should know that it's normal and it's okay to not feel that instant connection with your newborn. Okay, but the part of the interview that made all the headlines and caused all the scandal was when Bradley Cooper talked about being naked. So he says his New York City house has an open floor plan. There's no doors. He'll be like sitting on the toilet while his daughter is in the bath, which is honestly something I do often because there's no privacy in his place. He says there's a lot of nudity. Listen to this.
And we got to talk about nudity with a daughter. So it's like, we're the Swedish style or German. Like, we're naked all the time.
Me too.
And by the way, I was like that, not with my mom, but my dad.
He
my
was
dad
always nude.
Always nude. And always took showers with him.
There was no,
it was just
no evacuation, yeah, yeah. But showering was fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And you're quite comfortable nude.
Totally.
Because this is an audio medium, I'm just going to give us all a moment to visualize Bradley Cooper naked. Hmm. Got it? Okay, perfect. So this casual conversation about Bradley Cooper being naked turns into headlines. I'm going to read you actual headlines like Bradley Cooper, naked maestro. What does that even mean? Cover up Cooper, Bradley Cooper, nudist? Question mark. I mean, that's wild. It's like one offhand remark about being comfortable naked and we're accusing him of being a nudist. Okay. And then of course, outrage addiction strikes the internet, sparking a debate over whether or not you should be naked in front of your kids, with people writing things in the comments like, what happened to keeping things private? This is bad parenting. Nudity is a no. Gross. Too much in front of a child. Wow, I didn't realize all of these child development experts were hanging out on X waiting to comment on a headline from the Daily Mail, but there they are. So let's solve this debate once and for all, okay? Should you be naked in front of your child? On my show, New Mom Who Dis, I actually asked that question to internationally renowned child development expert Betsy Brown Braun. I said, when should I stop being naked in front of my children? And I'm just going to roll the clip, okay? Here's what she said to me.
I do believe that there is a time when it doesn't serve your little boys well to be seeing mommy naked. When children get to be around 4 is the time for the parent of the opposite gender to cover up. So your husband doesn't have to cover up. In fact, he probably shouldn't, because your boys will get to see what their bodies will look like when they're grown up.
Well, how is that fair? My husband and my kids get to run around having a sausage party and I have to cover up?
What does this have to do with fair? There's no fair. We're doing what's in the best interest of your kids' development. Another thing we say is when kids get to be eye height with the genitals of the opposite gender parent, eye to eye, that's another time that you're going to think about covering up. Because just picture it. Picture a little boy eye height. Oops. Probably not.
Oops. Oh, I can picture it. When my boys reached eye height with my genitals, they were like, what is that? Put it away. And I pretty much did. Like, I remember the moment that I caught them staring into the eye of the storm. And I was like, I need to take that advice from Betsy to heart. And Evan and I like sort of try to follow that guideline, you know? So him and the boys, they will still occasionally throw like their sausage parties in the shower. He'll like, mostly for practicality purposes, it's easier to just get the shower all done together, you know? But he'll do it with the boys. And like, they don't trip about nudity. And I try not to be ashamed if I'm naked. I'm not like, oh, you know, don't look. But I don't flagrantly do it. I am, however, flagrantly naked with my daughter, okay? I figure, like, if I have to cover up in front of my sons, trust you me, I'm going to let it all hang out with my daughter. I earned my right. My boobies are basically hers, okay? My body still belongs to her. I'm in Saskatoon, and I'm still sucking these puppies dry for her. So we'll have an occasional bath together, Romy and I. I try to be, like, comfortable with my body around her. I'll try to say things just like, I love my body. My body is strong. My body is beautiful. Like, I try to throw these things out to her. I don't know. I've never parented a girl before, but this is my technique. Okay? But we're not like Bradley Cooper walking around the house naked. We are not Swedish over here. We are very much Canadian. Pale, hairy, and covering up when possible. But let me just throw it out to the group. I'm going to answer all of your voicemails again starting next week. So tell me, like, what do you do? How naked are you in front of your kids? Let me write a judgmental comment on X about your family's choices, you know? Seriously, leave me a message. Tell me what you did when your children reached eye height. So thanks, Bradley Cooper. Haven't seen your Academy Award-nominated film, Maestro. Just spent 10 minutes dissecting your convo about nudity on a podcast. Culture! P.S. Bradley Cooper also alludes to his relationship with Gigi Hadid throughout this interview. He says he has someone in his life. That person has gotten him into reality TV, The Golden Bachelor, Love is Blind. I'm just here to say, I could have done that for you, Bradley. It's pretty much all I could have done for you, okay? Got you into Love is Blind. I do it very well. But I guess you needed a 28-year-old model to turn on your Netflix and walk you to the light. Speaking of 24-year-old models, I'd like to briefly touch on our old friend Kristen Cavallari's hard launch of her new 24-year-old boyfriend, Mark Estes. They went on a vacation to Mexico together. She posted a picture with him saying, "He makes me happy," heart emoji. And I assume the same people who commented on Bradley Cooper's nudity made it very clear to her that a 37-year-old divorced mother of three should not be dating a 24-year-old TikToker. Before you make a decision, I'd like to just lay out the facts here about Mark Estes, okay? Here we go. He was born in 1999. He was five when Kristen made her debut on Laguna Beach. He graduated college last year in 2023. He's closer in age to Kristen's 11-year-old child than he is to her. He lives in Nashville, like Kristen. He's an aspiring TikToker and a member of a TikTok group called the Montana Boys with a Z, where, along with pals Cade and Caleb, both spelt with K's, the three-member group shares videos, dancing to music, and showing off their cowboy lifestyle. I can't even read that without laughing. That's literally the description of the Montana Boys. Finally, he's ripped and hot and has a jawline sculpted by God. Just weighing the facts here, okay? I say, go for it. She's hot. She's been separated for 4 years. She deserves to find happiness. If she wants to drop the kids at dad's house and go make sweet TikTok to this man, why shouldn't she? Would I? Probably not. As a fellow mother of three, first and foremost, I don't know where she finds the energy. I could barely figure out how to find TikTok on my phone, let alone bang a TikToker in Mexico. I also personally would not want a fourth child to take care of. You feel me? Like, if God forbid something ever happened to Evan and I, and I found myself alone on my own with three kids, I'm going to be very honest here, phonies, as I always am with you, and tell you, I just want to find someone to take care of me. Okay? I found the love of my life. We worked our asses off to build a beautiful life together and have three gorgeous children together. I'm out building that life right now in the negative 30 degree temperatures in Saskatchewan. If I had to find someone again, I just want to find a billionaire to let me rest. I'm not sliding into a 24-year-old TikToker's DMs. I'm sliding into lobbies of office buildings in Silicon Valley. Let me be your arm candy for the remaining years of my life. In turn, I'd like a live-in nanny in a bathroom I don't share with three kids. But it is Women's History Month, and like Pitbull, we love a powerful woman getting what she wants. Even if that is a Montana boy with a Z. And so Kristen, Mark, Mark's rapidly growing TikTok following, I wish you well. Okay, after the break, Canadian comedian and let's say it, icon, Deborah DiGiovanni made headlines last week for calling out fat-phobic men at her shows. I'll tell you everything that went down and then revisit what I think is the most honest conversation I've ever had with a guest about weight, body image, and so much more next.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We're back, and it is International Women's Day Eve. Tonight, Santa will come down our chimneys and deliver gratitude and appreciation for 24 hours before we go back to doing it all unacknowledged. Too dark. Shit, roll some Pitbull to bring it back up.
I'm a powerful woman, working 9 to 5, 2-3 jobs just to survive. I'm a powerful woman.
Thanks, Dolly and Pitt. Either way, I wanted to celebrate by revisiting a conversation with a woman I have always admired. So I grew up watching Deborah DiGiovanni slay on Video on Trial. She was always funnier than all the men, right? Decades later, she's still one of the best working stand-up comedians out there. And last week, she really took my breath away when she posted this. And if you don't know Deborah, she self-identifies as being in a fat body. And I'm telling you this to contextualize her post. She wrote, "Last night, I truly thought about quitting comedy because I bombed in front of a crowd of straight men. The same men who only put me in the spotlight to make my existence slash body the punchline of their boring jokes. And then act like I'm invisible when I'm standing a foot away from them. Can you imagine giving up the thing that made me who I am today, that's brought me so much joy to my life and so many other people's, because some basic dudes don't like me? I've realized I often look away from the immense love of the people who support me to try and pursue the approval of those who never have and never will. I'm not going to do it anymore." Deborah DiGiovanni. I don't know. Maybe it was just like I needed to hear that. She is just, Deborah, you're the best at what you do. Don't let some basic ass straight men tell you otherwise. And that goes for every woman listening to this. Again, I'm getting emotional. I can't help myself. It's the air in these flatlands. So often we look for the approval of people who might never give it to us instead of appreciating and focusing on the people who do. I myself, oh my God, I tell myself this all the time. You know, not everybody is going to like you. Not everybody is going to like what you do. Not everybody is going to like what you put out into the world. So don't put shit into the world for those people. Put it into the world for the people who do appreciate it, connect to it, need it. That goes for all of you in whatever you do in your daily life. Stop seeking the approval from people who may never give it to you and start taking in the approval from the people who love you and support you and care about you. So thank you for that reminder, Deborah. And that's like really the surprising thing about her. I always knew Deborah was obviously hysterically funny. I didn't realize how vulnerable and honest she's been and continues to be. So not only do I want to applaud her for that, I want to revisit this incredibly surprising and powerful conversation I had with her live on stage at the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival when I recorded an episode of Phone a Friend there this past summer. So let's phone a friend. And by friend, I mean bring a friend out live on the stage.
Girl, let's bring a friend live out on the stage.
I am bringing out a comedy legend, queen. She's a 3-time Canadian Comedy Award winner who you know and love from Video on Trial, Last Comic Standing, Last One Laughing, Match Game, Canadian Idol, The Debaters, and every comedy club in North America. So say hello to Deborah DiGiovanni!
Thank you. Hi, everyone.
Would you like some walnuts?
No.
Okay, great.
I'm gonna pass on the crunchy scrotum.
So we started. Deborah, yeah. We've begun.
This has begun.
She's arrived. Deborah.
Hello.
Thank you for being my first ever live in the flesh. Phone a friend. Oh my God.
It's good to be here.
So I think all of us in this room, I have watched Deborah, loved Deborah, known about Deborah for years. But this week I did something I've never done. While I was looking up evanescence.com, I also looked up DeborahDiGiovanni.com, and I discovered that you, quote, began your studies in university pursuing fashion design.
Yes, I wanted to be a fashion illustrator. That's what I was an artist, uh-huh. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a fashion. And then the first day of art school, the fashion school, I went to Ryerson, and the first day the professor said, if you don't sleep, drink, eat, breathe, and dream fashion, you should leave. And I was like, where's the door? I gotta go. I made a huge mistake.
Okay, well, this is something that we like to do on this podcast because it is being recorded for audio only, and my phonies, official. It feels good to just live in that. Phonies, they can't see what we're wearing. Okay. So I would like to give them a vivid visual image. So I would like you, as a former fashion expert,
I'm jazzed,
to please do the honors of describing my ensemble. Okay. And please feel free to go into detail.
Okay. Can we have a stand-up? Can I get a good look-see? Okay. All right. Today, everyone, Jessie's wearing what I could only call Holly Hobby fashion with a touch of Little House on the Prairie. And all of these references are too old for your audience, but it makes it better. It's a onesie. It's a jumpsuit of some sort. It is. It looks like jammies slash, I don't know, a plaid romper suit of some sort. I'm pretty sure you can't get it on by yourself. I'm pretty sure. This takes the team. But it is. You look very pretty. You always look very pretty. And it's got a nice little ruffle, and there's a little bit of lilac. Is that a print of some sort? I think it is. You know what it looks like? It looks like old-timey wallpaper. Do you remember? Do you remember when they had that? They couldn't do too many
just
colors.
Just leave. Is it okay
they
if
couldn't
I just
do
go
too many colors, Jesse. They didn't have them.
Just go change.
But I wanted to talk about the shoes, though. The shoes we must discuss. The shoes, I can only describe them as hot as fuck. They're hot. They are high and pointed, and they look painful, and that is sexy.
If anybody is keeping score, there's one part of my body that is hot and sexy, and it's my feet. It's my damn feet. Deborah DiGiovanni, thank you. Wow. You know what's interesting? Like, the parts underneath this garment also feel like old-timey wallpaper, so it really hit. That really worked.
All right, good job.
So, Deborah, this is my first time at Just for Laughs.
Is it really?
It is a cherry pop for me.
Oh, my God.
How many times have you been with Just for Laughs,
Deborah? Oh, let's count. Before some of you were born, I'm pretty sure. I think the first time I came was 2005.
Wow.
Yeah, and I've been very fortunate. They've been very good to me, Just for Laughs. So I think I might be like 12, 13, 14, 15 times.
Oh my God.
I don't know. I really have to count.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Yeah.
We're in the presence of an icon. So I have to tell you this. It's probably inappropriate to say live at the festival, but this is my first comedy festival. I can't believe how wild it is. People are drinking all day. They're out till like 3 a.m. Someone invited me to a 1 a.m. show last night. I was like, are you out of your damn mind? I had to step over two sets of comedians, not one, but two, making out in various parts of the hotel.
Fantastic.
So my question for you is, has that ever been you, Deborah?
The one stepping over people, yes. But this is the thing. This is the secret. It's like comedy camp here. Do you know what I mean? So it's like everyone is all in the same place. You don't get to see everyone. And it's just, there's a very party aspect to it. They really do. People, I don't understand how they get through it. They don't sleep. They drink too much. They smoke too much. I don't know how they do it. I don't know. And then everyone goes home on Monday and gets sick. Because we're exhausted. We're exhausted.
I know. Yeah. See, my people don't understand. They pack walnuts in their purses.
Oh, my
gosh. They're not out.
I love a little protein snack. God bless you. Yeah.
I know.
No, thank you.
I have also kind of, you know, come to the realization being around all these comedians is that they are very complex individuals. You usually don't go into stand-up comedy unless you have some kind of deep-seated trauma. So what is yours, Deborah DiGiovanni?
Seriously?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, you know, I'm a twin. I know you have twins.
What?
I'm a twin. Did you know this?
We had buried the
damn meat. I know. I wanted to surprise you. I am a twin. I'm a fraternal. I'm a fraternal twin.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Are you
kid? Identical.
Identical. Okay.
Oh, wow. With a boy or a girl?
I'm a sister.
Oh, wow.
And she's 7 minutes older than me.
Okay.
And it's true. And that was the start, right? That was it. It was just, I didn't have a very good relationship with my mother, unfortunately. So I would say my therapist says a traumatized youth. So yeah, you know, I used to say that I grew up like funny for survival. Do you know what I mean? Like that was how we did it. You know, that was, after a while, I got very badly bullied. And then after a while, somewhere when I turned like maybe 11 or 12, I started realizing I could make people laugh. And then that would distract them long enough to run. Do you know what I mean? Like that was it. I was like, okay, I can get out of here. But I did. I had a rough childhood and that's fine.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Yes.
Were you breastfed until you were two?
Let me say this. You want to hear this? My mother breastfed my twin sister, but not me.
Wow.
Thank you for that gasp, everyone. I appreciate that response.
Wow.
Seriously, I know, right? So that's it, yeah. She really bonded. Okay, I feel so weird, but I'm telling you the truth.
No,
she really bonded with my sister. It was very much my sister, and I was actually her kind of keeper as I grew up. I was always her protector, and I was very much her, like, second mother. So it was kind of like, it was a little strange. And I have a big family, too. I have five siblings, so it's like, five kids, and yeah. There's a lot.
So one of my twins will be a comedian.
You're lucky. Congratulations.
Oh, God. I first discovered you, like I think many of my elder millennials here, on Video on Trial. I do not remember a single one of those straight white guys. I remember Deborah from that show. Was that like your big break, making fun of Christina Aguilera in Chaps?
100%. God bless her heart. Let me say, that was... It was interesting because, you know, my history was that I worked at the TV station, right? Like, I answered the phone at City TV, Much Music, and Bravo. That's,
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, I did. I was the receptionist, and I did tours. And then, you know, when I eventually thought, okay, I'm going to start comedy, and I left the station, they started a Video on Trial, like, maybe 3 or 4 years into me doing comedy. And so I was fortunate because they're like, hey, doesn't Deborah do comedy? And they just called me in. And everyone else had to audition and stuff. And I didn't. So I was just there automatically. Yeah. And then at the time, too, like a lot of comics were like, I'll tell you the truth. They didn't pay us.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't. They just didn't. They were like, do you want to do this? And we're like, oh, all right. And then a lot of comics were like, well, I'm not going to do it if I don't get paid. And then fast forward to like 3 years later, they're like, can I do the show again?
Right.
And then, yeah, it took off in a way that I never, ever would have guessed. It was pretty big for a while. It was really pretty big for a while.
It was
people
huge.
Still remember it. Like, that yes. is the number one thing that people yes. talk to me about. It ended in 2013, and people still say to me, video on trial. I know. Yeah. Very yeah. fortunate.
Well, same with me. How many people here after are going to ask me about the after show? I mean, please.
Yes, yeah. right? Oh, my yeah. gosh.
Oh, it's yeah. fine. We yeah. get it. The thing about Video on Trial that is yeah. similar to when I was at MTV is that yes. it was on during, like, peak 2006 to 2010, like, yeah. tabloid Perez Hilton
oh, yes.
culture,
oh, yes, yes.
where it was okay
oh, yeah.
to make fun of women
yeah.
and, like, people's physical appearance and make jokes about Lindsay Lohan's vagina. Like, that was cool. Do you ever worry that jokes you made then could get
oh,
you canceled now?
Yes, yes.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, truly. Like, I think even, like, just even like in like the last 6 or 7 years, like there have been jokes that I have definitely retired. I've been doing comedy since 2000.
Uh-huh.
Things have changed. Things have really changed.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that, you know, they seem innocuous. They seem gentle. And you're like, I'm just teasing. And then you realize, no, mm-hmm. I'm wrong. Honestly, I'm going to say like a solid chunk of jokes. They're retired. They're
yeah,
gone.
Yeah, they're gone.
I, you know, I'm not going to apologize for them because they were at a time that it was whatever, but I will not perform them anymore. And that's my saying. Done. I won't do that anymore. So there's a lot of things, a lot of jokes that I really like too, but I can't do them anymore. Yeah.
No, but I like
yeah.
that because so many people are getting, yeah. are apologizing. And the fact that you're just like, yeah. it was the
well,
time.
I think so. And I know that's a feeble excuse, but it was though. Like
yeah.
it was in 2004, we said words that we just do not say now.
Yeah.
So, so there's a lot of that. And
yeah.
you know what? Good. I'm glad to learn that. I'm thrilled to have that, you know, happen. And because I think we need to, you know, I think you need to learn it and go, okay, we can't say everything.
Yeah.
yeah.
So I should cut the next segment I had that was called Sluttiest Sluts
Whoa,
of 2010.
Yes.
Should I cut that? That doesn't work anymore.
It does work.
That was the shit we were doing at the time. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Is there anyone that you were particularly hard on Video on Trial that you would like to ask for forgiveness live on Phone a Friend
oh,
with
gosh.
These phonies as your witness?
Okay.
This is the number one comedy podcast, next only to Smart List. Fuck you, Jason Bateman.
Fuck you, Jason Bateman.
Okay, I would have to be all the girls of the time. I do. I have to say sorry to, oh gosh, definitely Jessica Simpson. For
Ooh.
Sure, for sure.
Ooh.
Christina Aguilera, for
Ooh.
Sure. I know I made fun of Shakira. I know. yeah, I made fun of Britney Spears. We took them. Oh, Selena Gomez, God bless you. Sorry, Selena. I really made fun of you.
Number three on the list.
Demi Lovato. All the girls.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think I need to apologize for Jessica Simpson too for jokes I made about her cork wedges two weeks ago on this podcast.
Yeah.
So sorry to her.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, Deborah,
yeah.
you are a staple on Video on Trial,
yeah.
but the tables are about to turn. I'm going to ask you five
okay.
of the most hard-hitting, so scandalous they feel illegal questions
oh
I can
God.
Think of. And you have to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Hand up. Do you promise? Do you swear?
I swear to Jesse.
Perfect. This is Deborah on Trial.
Deborah on Trial.
Okay, settle in. Here we go. Who is the rudest celebrity you've ever encountered?
The singer for Metric.
Oh! Canadian
I answered that
icon
fast,
Emily
I?
Haynes?
I answered that real fast.
Oh, yeah, my
was,
God.
Yeah, and that's a shame because I always love that band.
Wow.
Yeah.
We're dragging fellow Canadians here. Mary Fuck Kill Comedians Edition.
Oh.
Kevin Hart.
Okay.
Pete Davidson.
Oh.
Louis C.K.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm going to get canceled with this answer. This is it. Okay, definitely kill Louis C.K.
Thank you, yeah.
And then kill him again.
Oh, okay. Okay,
one more time.
Part of the question.
And then I'm gonna marry Kevin Hart. Yeah, you know what I mean? He's got a lot of money. And Pete Davidson, of course we're gonna fuck him. What else are you gonna do with Pete Davidson? I mean, seriously. yeah. Is that your choice too? Is that what you would have done too?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, absolutely. Yeah. Imagine if I had said, fuck Louis C.K. Please.
Get me out of here right now.
Oh, God. What is the most humiliating thing you've ever done on stage?
Oh, God. Okay. One of the most humiliating things, stage, but television. The one thing, when I was on Last Comic Standing, they made me wear a jester uniform. On NBC. And it wasn't even just a jester uniform. It was half of a jester uniform. They gave me the top and no pants. And I was like, may I have the pants? And they're like, no. And they left. And I had like nylons, pantyhose, and a top. I cried in the bathroom for 45 minutes and then went on stage and did it on NBC nationally. And then I went back and I cried for another hour and a half. And then, but I did it.
Look who's fucking Pete Davidson now, okay? Yeah.
But yeah, that was bad.
Name one performer you'd like to aggressively throw a cell phone at or a pack of almonds.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that's a hard one.
Comedian, musician, actor.
Nicole Kidman.
Oh!
Whoa!
The blonde white ladies are going down in this segment.
First of all, she could use an almond. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? So she catch them in her mouth, whatever. But I just feel like she needs a little shake up, a little bit. You know what I mean? You gotta just remind her.
Okay, one more question. Okay. Number five. On your Instagram page, you had something called hashtag Deborah's Fake Boyfriend Friday, where you would thirst after men and call them your fake boyfriend.
Yeah.
Please scan the crowd and pick one person here to be your hashtag fake boyfriend.
And this one here with the glasses and the bleed. Yeah, you.
Stand up.
Yeah, you're a fake
boyfriend.
Stand
up, sir. Let us objectify you.
Ooh! Hi there, cutie.
Ooh!
Hey.
Ooh!
Fake boyfriend. That's cute.
Absolutely good choice. I would take my sister wife outfit off for him any day.
And that is how
you play Deborah on trial.
Yay! Did I pass? Did I lose? Did I win?
That was the most honest anything I've ever done. That was incredible. Okay, so much of your comedy over the course of a decade has been about you being single.
Yes.
I'd like to make a formal announcement. Drum roll, please. Deborah, is it true that you are in a relationship?
Yes, it is.
Woo! And listen, from what I can gather from stalking you on TikTok, this person's name is Filippo. He lives in London, England, not Ontario.
As I wipe my sweaty face. Yes. He's Italian, but he grew up, he was born in Italy, and the Italian Alps, which I didn't know existed, and there's Alps in Italy. Did you know that?
No, I had no idea.
Anyway, so we found that out, and now he's in London.
Wow. And so here's a question.
Yeah.
Are you worried that being in love will make you less funny?
Oh my goodness, yes. Because here's the thing. We all know pain is funny, right? It just is. And now it's like, I'm all like happy and content and stuff. And I'm like, what am I gonna do now? But don't worry, because I'm gonna fuck it up so soon. I'm gonna mess this up so bad. Like, I heard you talking about Adele. I'm like, you wait and see. When he dumps me, my next special is gonna be better than Adele's before she was thin. Do you know what I mean? You wait and see. It's gonna be 19 all over again. Oh, I'm gonna win my Emmy after he dumps me.
Okay, you are somebody who, like Adele, used to tour all the time.
Yes, yeah.
Always performing, always on the road.
Yeah.
Stand-up is what you love,
yes,
right?
It is.
It's what you love.
Number one, yep.
But after the pandemic, you told me you kind of stopped going out for a while.
I did. I had, March, 12th, 2020, my entire year canceled in a day. Like, I just had everyone call me and say, this is canceled, and I could just evaporated a year. So I was like, okay, because we usually, try to get ourselves booked for about a year out, and that was done. And then the first couple of months, we were like, okay, we're getting used to this. And then, I don't know, somewhere around, maybe the middle of 2021, I needed some time to myself, I think. I was really struggling with the pandemic and, I'll say it honestly, I don't know about you guys, but I was in America during the pandemic, right? I live in Los Angeles, and all the message that I heard was, if you're fat, you're going to die and we don't care. And I was terrified. I was walking around like, you know, I'm in America, like the hospital system is different. And like the message over and over, like I had literally people tweet at me and say, if you get sick, we don't fucking care. You're going to die. You deserve to die. And I was like, so I was walking around every day going, I could die and no one cares if I die. And it instilled a fear in me that I didn't know about. And so then I had a little trouble. I'm getting emotional. I had a little trouble I started to isolate a little bit. And then I found myself just getting, I got stuck. I got stuck in my apartment. And yeah, and it just took a long time because I still feel a little different. Like I don't feel like the Deborah I was before the pandemic. So that's it. So I'm isolated. You know, a lot of my friends left. I was alone. No, and my whole social is comedy, right? Like I'm an introvert, I'm neurodivergent, so I'm not good at social, but comedy is my social. So that was taken away from me. I really struggled. And so probably I'd say most of 2022, I took the time off, and I've never done that. And it was hard and it's scary, but yeah, I did.
But so. I'm so glad that you're saying that because I feel like a lot of people here can relate to that. Yeah. Like something in all of us changed during whether you want to admit it or not. And things like for me that used to be really easy, like flying to Montreal and getting up on a stage and doing something that I usually do literally in a bathrobe live was suddenly really terrifying. Like I seriously had flop sweats for you people. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like that's a real thing.
Yeah.
What is your advice for anybody who might be afraid for any reason to like get back out and do the thing that they once loved?
See, this is the thing. It's hard, but I know that, like, okay, this is what someone said to me recently. I'm trying to let go of the idea of pre-pandemic Deborah because I feel like that is the thing that I keep going, but I want to go back to that. It's a new normal. Yeah. So it's like, I think we have to forgive ourselves for feeling different and accept that it's okay that we feel different. We lived through a global pandemic. Mm-hmm. Millions, literally millions of people died. Mm-hmm. It's not weird to feel weird, mm-hmm. I don't think. And I do, I mean, especially in our industry, a lot of people are walking around going, what pandemic? Ah! And they're all jazzed. And I'm just not like that. And also, too, on the outside as well, you know, because I have spent most of my life on the road, the sort of the normal schedule of being home, I like it.
Yeah.
I like it a lot. Yeah. I like going to bed at 10:30.
Oh, my God.
It's
nice.
And then, like, you know, having like Saturday afternoon off, it's nice. Uh-huh. I never did. I mean, I was always the person that, like, if weddings, people would tell me first, we're going to have a wedding in a year. Can you take the day off? And I'm like, maybe. You know, this, but now it's like, I can go to your wedding now.
Yeah,
but yeah,
right.
So it's a lot of things have changed, but yeah, we're fine. We made it through and we'll keep going. That's all I have to say. You know, we're here. We're fine.
I love that so much.
Yeah.
And truly, one of the things that people love about you and your comedy so much is just how, like, real you are and open and vulnerable you are. You have talked openly about going to rehab for an eating disorder because you said you had been on a diet for 40 years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we all have. We all have. I think as women, we all are on diets for most of our lives. Like I was saying to Jesse in the green room back, like how women, it's so in the fiber of our beings that we all know calories like men know sports stats. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I mean, I see women nodding right now and it's like, if I said how many calories in a banana, I bet half of you know how many calories are in a banana. And I'm going to say 70 and some of you are going to go, is that a big banana or a small banana, Deborah? You know what I mean? That's it. And it's just wrong because it's all garbage. It's all garbage. And it's, I'm not going to say the name, but I went to a 12-step group for food. And it's not the right way to do it because, you know, when people have an addiction, they stop that addiction. But unfortunately, with food, we have to eat. So it's impossible to treat it like a normal addiction. You can't because you just say, I don't drink anymore. I'm a sober person. So it's like those things I can stop. Mm-hmm. Food, we can't. So it makes it, you can't treat it like a regular addiction. Can I talk about it? The one thing that I learned, and again, I'm not pushing anything. It was just getting rid of diet culture and how it's called intuitive eating, whatever. But it's really about giving power. Food has too much power. We've given it way too much power. We've given it moral power. We've given it this thing like bad food, good food. There's no such thing as bad and good food, everybody. It's just food. It's just food. It's so hard, though. The diet, it's so hard. We all want to be thin. I hear all of my friends Do I look fat? Do I look fat? It's the theme constantly of, and then my family was riddled with it as well. So it's hard. It's hard walking around saying to people, I went to rehab and I still live in this body, but I'm just trying to accept this body. That's what I'm trying to do. That's all I want to do.
Yes.
All
yes,
I want to do.
Yes.
I don't, you know what? I don't even do that. Yeah, do that. That needs.
Fucking. Yeah. Slide whistle that shit. Yes.
Yes. Because, you know, one, yes, thing, one of the big things that I really, one of the messages from rehab that I really took away was, it's like, okay, so it's because we're more than our bodies, right? But the whole thing about body positivity, which we support. But we don't have to love our bodies. Did you know that? We just have to accept them. We have to say, look at, let's not hate our bodies. Let's not be at war. Saying you love your body every minute of the day is completely unreasonable. Uh-huh. Like, it's not going to happen. So we don't have to focus on that, because I think we feel like we're failing at loving our bodies. So I am just trying to accept, this is the body I live in. This is the body I live in right now. I want to stop apologizing for it and just accept it. And then maybe one day love will come, but it doesn't even have to. I just want to live in acceptance.
You already have Filippo. He came. So
I know. I mean,
so
come on.
Love will come.
Come on.
From Italy. Yes.
Yeah.
But can I ask you just this, just yes, to put a button on this? Because yeah, you have spent so many years making fun of yourself.
Yes, this is the thing. This is the thing. And that's because I did start with that sort of like, because I think a lot of people, when there's a noticeable difference, especially when we're on stage, my brain was always like, I'm going to get to it before you do. I'm going to say it before you can say anything. So it's like, I'm fat, before you're all thinking, oh, shit. And even though I don't know what you're thinking, my brain said I knew what you were thinking. And that's how I dealt with it. And yeah, I don't want to be that debasing anymore, but I also know that this is the body I live in. So my jokes still come from a fat place, because I live in a fat body. And even saying fat, I know people recoil. It's just a description. That's all it is. It's not a bad word. We use it when people want to, the first thing you say, a fat cat, or who cares? It's what, if you were going to describe me in a lineup, you'd go brown hair, fat, brown eyes. You know what I mean? That's it. It's just a description. And I'm taking the word back, and that's all there is to it. Here we go.
Wow. No, yeah. I truly do love hearing that. Because I think that this is so much unlearning. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of us, like, how many people are parents?
Oh.
Oh, yes.
I can't even imagine. Oh,
right?
My gosh.
We have to, I think, use a lot of that in the way that we raise our kids. A lot of that language, like, fat is a descriptive word.
It's just a description.
There are no bad foods and no good foods. Mm-hmm. Like, this is so, I think it's so important to hear.
It is.
So thank you.
Yes. Good.
And I just love how open you are about your journey to self-acceptance.
Yeah.
So I thought we could end this conversation with Deborah today by reading some powerful, positive affirmations for my listeners, my phonies. Are you up for
that?
Yeah,
I'm into it. I'm into it. Let's do it.
Okay, great. And because I would like to ride on the coattails of the Barbie movie for as long as it's relevant,
woo!
We are going to read inspiring feminist lyrics from Barbie World Remix by Nicki Minaj and Ice Spice.
All right.
Oh.
I'm bad like the Barbie. I'm a doll, but I still want a party.
Pink vet, like I'm ready to bend. I'm a 10, so I pull in a Ken.
Ooh, ooh. It girls and we ain't playing tag. Rad, but he spank me when I get bad. Ooh.
That pussy's so cold. We just chillin' out. It's Barbie, bitch. If you still in doubt.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Everybody just said that.
The fuck they gon' say now? I'm washing these bitches. I'm rubbing the stain out. Grah.
Yeah. I know the trick. So I got him bricked. Yeah. They know who lit. Me and Barbie. Bitch.
Wow, wow, wow. Powerful, impactful. Deborah, I think we touched a lot of people here with that. And if you want more of this Barbie bitch, and I know you do, you're going to find out everything that Deborah is up to in 2023. It's a new year. She's out now.
I don't know.
Follow her on Instagram. And she's a TikTok sensation, in case you didn't know, @ Deborah DG.
Yeah.
Deborah,
thank you so
for being my first
pleasure.
Live phone a friend. Deborah DG Giovanni.
Love you so much. you so much. You're the best. Bye, everyone.
The best. What?
Deborah DiGiovanni. I mean, I remember that being such a surprise to me on that stage because I expected her to be funny. We're literally at a comedy festival. I just never expected her to get that candid about her life and, you know, where she's at and how the pandemic has affected her and her body. Like, she just blew me away. I'm so grateful to her for her vulnerability and her honesty. We also ended up hanging out for the rest of the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival. By the way, that was like the best part of connecting with her on that stage because it is a whole scene out there. I didn't know anyone. I'm new to this festival. She took me backstage at her big showcase. We hung out at the hotel. We became kind of friends in earnest, and I just feel so lucky for that. And that's it for our final mid-season banger. Next week, we officially launch season 2. Jason, my producer, will make his triumphant return, and I will be exactly the same. Now I'm literally like shutting down the mic and running to the airport to fly to Toronto to shoot my stand-up special. And you know what? Let's get Pitbull's 9 to 5 going here. Feels appropriate. It's Mr. Worldwide. Did I just say Pitbull's 9 to 5? What a crime against humanity. Dolly Parton's 9 to 5. Featuring Pitbull. Thank you from the bottom of my very frozen heart to the people of Saskatchewan for taking such good care of me here. I cannot wait to see all of my Ontario phonies at my shows in Toronto. You better bring the heat like these damn Saskatchewanians did. Okay? The bar is high, Toronto. I'll see you on Saturday night. And I'll report back on our season premiere next week. Have an amazing week. Let's talk next Thursday on the official launch of Phone a Friend Season 2. Bye! Empower us, Pitt. Working 9 to 5. What a way to make a living, baby. Getting by. It's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind and they never give you credit. It's enough to drive you crazy if you let it. 9 to 5. Phone a Friend was created by our mommy, Jessie Quixick. The executive producers are Jesse Cruikshank and Jason Yanba. The technical producer is Rob Parrott. The amazing theme song and sexy interludes are by Jay Malinowski from Bedouin Soundclash. Phone a Friend is part of the Acast Creator Network. Credits are by us, Ray Gatica and Rio Gatica. We're her kids. That's crazy, right? Wow, you're still listening? Okay, see you next week.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.